May it please the court.
Sir.
2004, the respondent started with the Spangler Crouch firm in Harrisonville, also had offices in Belton, became partners 6 or 7 years later. In 2013, he was there when he had a firm's iPad and lost it. He didn't tell the firm that he lost it, but did put it in lost mode, which is something that I products can do to find them. Just 1 week after that, the Belton office, where respondent spent quite a bit of time, there was a break-in the day he arrived on a Monday after a weekend. Among the things listed as stolen was that iPad. Again, didn't tell either the police or his firm that it had already been lost in his mind. A few days after that, he took it out of lost mode, and then again without telling the firm what was happening with it, and then apparently remotely deactivated it a few days after that. The firm asked him whether he had used the feature Find My iPhone that some of us have to use sometimes, because it does work for iPads apparently, and he said he had tried and he had not found it. Then a few weeks after that, Thanksgiving, he finds the iPad in his car. He doesn't tell his firm, he doesn't tell the police. He knows that the firm is reporting it to, is making a claim, an insurance claim as well, as if it were stolen. In April of the following year, 4 months later or so, he knows that the formal claim to the insurance company is being made, and again doesn't tell anybody about it. Then a couple of months later, there were some computer problems with the firm. They ended up the firm asked the respondent to leave and asked for firm property back. He returned the iPad that had been reportedly stolen at that time. Then the firm files the OCDC complaint. At this point, the one key question that I think remains is what sanction best suits respondents' repeated purposeful and selfish decisions to allow his partners, their insurer, and the police to continue to believe his initial story that the firm-owned iPad had been stolen once he found it in his car. As I see it, whether you look at ABA sanction standards or at the Missouri previous cases from Missouri, the analysis turns on whether it was knowing conduct or negligent. I think the respondent and the panel agree that those are the key factors. We disagree over whether it was negligent or knowing. The DHB, the panel, found both. And there's a sentence where they say the respondent acted knowingly in dishonesty, misrepresentation, deceit, or fraud, however that language reads. And in another sentence said that he was negligent in taking.
Well, certainly their finding was that it was negligent.
Well, they also made a finding that it was. I wish I had the page number. It's actually just a few paragraphs ahead of where it says that it's negligent, as I recall. But it did seem that they ended up with negligence. I agree, Your Honor. But that's where it ended up.
I know we can reevaluate the facts. Why do you think we should have here? Do we think they failed to look at some things, or?
I do. I think respondents' own explanations refute any claim of negligence. I mean, here's what he said. He said when he thought about it, and he did think about it, on whether to tell at the time he found it, he said everything went through my mind. I made the decision not to say anything. What's negligent? I mean, he knew. It wasn't that he forgot he had found it. It wasn't that he forgot that it was a good idea. He made a decision not to say anything. Then when asked by his attorney in the panel hearing, he said, primarily, probably, mostly, because I was essentially embarrassed that the darn thing had been in my car and didn't really have an explanation for why it was in my car, and I didn't know it was in my car, and I unfortunately made the decision not to say anything to anybody. So
The standards that we look to
they use the word generally. And they say reprimand is generally appropriate under the certain circumstances. So even if the standards would generally be appropriate, is it, I mean, within the court's purview, and I understand with DHP, but don't we assume that they looked at all the circumstances and made a determination under all the circumstances that reprimand was appropriate, as opposed to there is some technical requirement that it has to be something, a punishment greater than reprimand. And aren't you in effect, I question that it really is a misapplication of the standard, or just they exercise their discretion to say reprimand's appropriate.
I think I understand, and I agree that it's none of these are hard and fast rules. It's not sentencing guidelines, and it isn't that way for either the court or the panel, is my view. But if we use the standards, either the previous decisions of this court or the ABA sanctioned standards, they still come down to negligence or knowing.
But I think it's a misapplication. We use the standards in context, because
Right. Whether
someone does something that's knowing or negligently, it depends on what they did. And so we have people who take money out of their trust account,
right,
and we look at whether it's knowingly done or negligently done, and that is a big deal. The question, so for me, it is, you're applying the standards, but you're applying them in the context of the events that occurred. And I understand what you're saying, but the question for me is, what's the appropriate sanction under these facts that we're not compelled to follow the letter of the ABA standard? And his explanation was that he was embarrassed and that's why he didn't do it, as opposed to there are people who claims are made to insurance companies and they're intentionally fraudulent. I mean, don't all those factors come into what's the appropriate sanction, as opposed to just the technical requirements of the standards?
I don't completely, well, I understand that. I understand that point. I mean, I think that anytime there are misrepresentations that are intentional by a lawyer, and I understand the context here is not the same as stealing money outright, or for that matter, stealing an iPad outright. It's not the same. But in Kriegel, not very long ago, the court held that the failure to correct a misapprehension is no less dishonest than an affirmative.
Well, the ABA standards you quote say reprimands generally appropriate where a lawyer's negligent either in determining whether statements or documents are false or in taking remedial action when material information is being withheld. And they also say reprimand is generally appropriate when a lawyer knowingly engages in other conduct, sort of lesser conduct than the kind of stealing and so forth we're talking about, that involves dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. So they, it's interesting, they talk about knowing and talk about negligent in different ones, but in both instances say reprimand is appropriate. Aren't they, my impression from this is they were trying to make that distinction between the circumstances in which the dishonesty occurred, and was it pure embarrassment and failing to reveal something once you discovered you'd been wrong, or are you misrepresenting because you personally are going to gain from it, or is it...
Or you want an advantage in a case.
Here's my problem with that. I think embarrassment is just as selfish as taking. I mean, it's still about protecting myself.
Well, he knew that he had two when they asked him to turn it in.
Exactly.
And he consciously made the decision to turn in one instead of two.
Right. Yes.
And then when he
turned... Well, one was stolen, right? One was.
Well, no, the firm had to turn the equipment back to the firm, and he knew he had two, and he knew he had reported the one as stolen.
That's right.
And he consciously, he didn't negligently, according to his own testimony, he consciously decided that it would look bad to hand back two, and he gave back one instead.
Exactly. He said, I wasn't comfortable with having to explain it to them. I mean, and that's why, I mean, it's it's no less selfish to avoid being making a mistake. It's still about protecting my own self.
Well, but under these rules, it does seem to be.
I'm sorry?
Under these rules, doesn't it seem to be treated less seriously? Failing to take remedial action when material information is being withheld is under reprimand, whereas affirmatively, they draw these distinctions, and sometimes they're fine lines, but they do appear to be distinguishing based on different situations.
Yeah, I can't remember which standard that is, but I understand.
6.13,
okay.
I mean, that doesn't mean we have to, but that's something that these standards have done.
And I think what you're saying is, despite the fact the motivation was embarrassment, the conduct is still sufficiently serious to warrant a greater sanction than that recommended by the DHP.
Yes, that is our position. I mean, and the court has done the same thing since Couples 1. Respondent wants to rely on the first Couples case. But since that case, in Couples and Kriegel, both have said that reprimand is not appropriate for knowing deception.
Did he ever report the second one until he was confronted by OCDC?
No.
Did he ever report that he had the second one until he was confronted by the OCDC?
He did not. That's at least what's in the record. There's nothing in the record that he reported that to anybody until the OCDC sent him a letter and asked him what happened.
Under 5.13, even knowing conduct generally merits a reprimand under 5.13. So why wouldn't, even if we bought your argument with respect to negligent versus intentional, why wouldn't the proper sanction be reprimand under 5.13? A lawyer knowingly engages in other conduct that involves dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation.
If just applying 5.13 and finding that there's no crime, and I think both receiving and submitting a false police report are...
Well, he hasn't been convicted. We don't make convictions, so he hasn't been charged with a crime. Well, is that right?
He has not been charged with a crime. The court has, in the past, considered that. But so I think 5.13, reading it just by itself, and if you assume there's no crime, then yes, the reprimand would be the only sanction. The court in the second Couples case looked at standard 7.2, the integrity of the profession standard, and which tells again that that when it's knowing conduct and it involves the integrity of the profession, then suspension is most appropriate, and reprimand is only appropriate if it's negligent.
Do you have an analysis that would help us in deciding whether it's 5 or 6 or 7, which seem to have different sanctions for knowing conduct? Anything that brings those together and explains why they're different?
No, other than I think the court's own cases are helpful. I think the Couples 2 case is helpful. For that matter, the Couples 1 case is helpful in that one of the points that the majority made in finding a reprimand was appropriate was that Missouri had not had a written decision squarely addressing the matter of lawyers lying to their own law firms.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Sure.
The ABA standards, which this court has often cited and utilized, indicate in the framework and in the preview that discipline should be consistent. And if it is not consistent, it casts doubt on the efficiency and basic fairness of all disciplinary systems. And consistency is necessary for fairness to the public and to the bar. So starting from that premise, both parties in this case cited to the disciplinary hearing panel as the controlling decision, couples won. We cited it for the majority decision, which said reprimand. The informant says, no, follow the dissent. Well, the dissent didn't impose any discipline. The discipline that was imposed was reprimand. If you look at couples, this case is so much less egregious than couples that it's amazing. And the disciplinary hearing panel analyzed it and said couples is way worse than this. And if couples is a reprimand case, then this is a reprimand case. And I think that's correct. Look at what couples did. First off, he had a plan to leave the firm. The firm didn't know he was going to leave. In connection with that plan to leave the firm, he had another plan, and that plan was to keep the cases that he was handling out of the docket system in the firm so that when he left, he could take 15 cases with him and the firm would be no wiser.
What makes his conduct much more culpable in this case is the knowledge that a claim is a fraudulent or unsubstantiated claim is being made to an insurance company, and they're being asked to pay money for something that didn't happen.
And
so
that's
pretty culpable.
Well, and I understand it, but as opposed to couples, that's an act of omission. That's not an act of commission. In couples, he puts this plan together, and that takes some thought.
Well, what about the fact he knew he had two and he only turned back one?
He should have he should have turned it back.
That seems like commission to me.
Yeah, I would agree with you that is, but not speaking. I mean, he had a duty under the couples one case. The duty is created to deal fairly with your firm. He was still in the firm. He didn't have any plans to leave the firm. There was no need for him to worry about an iPad. He could possess an iPad. He was entitled to do so. He didn't do anything wrong in this case until he found the iPad in the back of his vehicle.
Well, wasn't it wrong to say that it was stolen and not lost?
I don't think so. Under the circumstances, Judge, this is a burglary that takes place. There's the hubbub of a burglary. He thinks that the iPad is normally in this location in the office. It wasn't there. They did an inventory. What was missing?
iPad. What about that he put it on lost before then?
Why had he?
That he put it in lost mode before the burglar.
Yes. He couldn't find it.
But he thought he'd lost it someplace in the office?
He didn't know where it was. He thought it was either home or at the Harrisonville office or at the Belton office. He wasn't sure, but he knew where it was regularly stashed. And when the burglary took place, he says, I guess it was here and was stolen. I don't see anything wrong with that. The problem comes when he finds the iPad and he agrees that he should have clearly advised the firm at that time. He had a duty under couples to deal with them fairly because he was still in the firm, wasn't planning on leaving. He breached his duty when he didn't tell them.
Does the insurance contract cover lost iPads or only stolen iPads?
No, I can't tell you, but the claim was a claim under a theft provision, as I understand it, and there was a single deductible that was applied to all the things that were stolen, that was where that was. But you know what did couples do? He took firm files, but whose files are those? Those are client files. Those files belong to the client. So he's dealing with client property. What is the most important duty that we owe as lawyers to the people that we represent, come to see us and trust us to do something. Couples took the client's property. He didn't tell the firm. He lied about it. He put up numerous defenses that were spurious and were, in fact, found by the court to be frivolous and not in good faith. As a result of what he did, there was also a default judgment taken against one of the State Farm insured defendants. Client harm. There is no client harm, no client duty involved in this case. None at all. This is between Mr. Heffley and the firm. Not only did couples take the firm, take the files, he had done work on some of those, and his plan was to bill for that work once he had it himself, even though the work had been done while he was at the Dacey firm. To me, that's fairly egregious, and I think when you deal with the client issues in it, couples is a much more significant case than this is. I know that Mr. Heffley has thought many times about, why didn't I come forward and say what I needed to do? I had a duty to do it, I didn't do it. Well, whether you call it negligence or intentional, whatever, duty breach of duty, he breached his duty. And we don't make any issue of that. We believe that the proper remedy in this case is discipline. We think anything more than that is inconsistent with what is in couples. Couples took
the... How old is couples, about 20 years?
I'm sorry?
Couples one is, what, 21 or 22 years ago?
Couples one is about 22 years ago.
I can't tell you what the date is, but I remember it well when it came out.
97 for Couples 1.
And then, of course, Couples did kind of the same thing again.
What about the reputation and integrity of the profession? Was it different back in the late 90s than it is now that might need more protecting?
Do I think the reputation of the legal community is worse today than it was then?
Right.
I think there is a greater concern, at least internally, about how we deal with each other than there was then, because we didn't have too many of those issues of dealing with folks in a got you kind of a mindset. From the public perspective, I don't know, Judge, whether there is some thought that we're worse off or better off. I have my own views that the things that are way back were better than the things today many times, I think in my own mind the advent of the electronic records keeping filings have changed considerably the way people deal with each other, because you deal almost instantaneously with exchanges of information. There are ways to get information that are at your fingertips that used to take you either a real good memory or some ability to get the digest.
One reason for stronger discipline like suspension is to protect the public.
Yes.
Is there any need for that here? How do we weigh that?
I don't think so. I don't think he's any menace to the public. There's no indication that any client has been impacted in any fashion. This is, for the most part, what I would say an intramural situation between him and the firm. I mean, in the end of the day, as usually happens when you don't step up, who suffers? He does. He'd done what he was supposed to do, we wouldn't be here. And he understands that. And he, as I stand here, I think since you brought up, Judge Fisher, something my dad used to love to say, that good judgment comes from experience. And experience comes from bad judgment. And that's kind of where this is. He made a bad judgment. He's had some experience. I think it's very unlikely that he's going to make that kind of mistake again in the future, having had to go through this. This is an unnerving process, and I certainly think the disciplinary hearing panel spent quite a bit of time. They participated in the interrogation of Mr. Heffley. They asked significant questions, and they analyzed it, and they thought that Couples was the controlling case and was worse than this case, and that therefore that should be the result.
Are there cases since Couples, like the Kriegel case, where the court has imposed harsher sanctions for misrepresentation, for knowing dishonesty?
Yes. I don't think there's any question that that happens from time to time. I think this case does fall into the ABA standard, however, on personal integrity, which is what 513, and in which they say, in this circumstance, as I see it, that reprimand is the proper and
legal adequate. Involved misrepresentation to the court about whether there was someone else who would be affected by legal involved misrepresentation to the court, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So that.
You know, the submission of false evidence to a court is a significant, or to any tribunal, in my judgment, is a very, very serious thing. And we don't have that in this case. He didn't make any submission to a tribunal. But I think the analogy to what you would do if you had done so is there, that he should have done something to undo that. And we have never taken the position that nothing should happen in this case. We just believe that looking at these facts and looking at Couples and looking at where we are, and the fact that even though you have a so-called knowing action, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a stiffer penalty. And we do lots of things that are intentional but end up being called negligence. You know, we speed. We speed by choice. Nobody makes you do that. You can set it on cruise control and know where it's going to be. You made a conscious decision. Well, when you get to the end of the day, anybody going to fine you or entitled to punitive damages from that? Probably not. But you made a conscious decision to do something. But it's not of the nature that should raise this to a more stringent discipline and a reprimand. I think one of the amazing things to me is that in the argument that was in the informant's brief, they say at they don't now believe what they charged, that he found the iPad. Well, if he didn't find it, I don't know what they're talking about in this case, that they make that. I don't know why, but they got to make the choice of what to charge. They charged it, we admitted it. As far as we're concerned, it's admitted, and that's where it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think the Couples 1 split decision is not controlling for sanction because cases since have established the reprimand is not to be used for knowing misrepresentations, misstatements. and because my point I made earlier that the one of the last lines in the majority was that they were giving weight to the fact that the court had not previously addressed sanctions of violations like that, intra-firm issues, which I agree that's what we're dealing with here. And the court pointed out in Couples 2 that intra-firm disagreements appropriately do result in discipline when they involve dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or if they use the resources for personal gain. Mr. Heffley repeatedly made conscious, self-motivated decisions to allow his partners, the police, and the firm's insurance company to believe that a thief had stolen the iPad when he knew that wasn't true, all because he wasn't comfortable with telling the truth. So I think that suspension is appropriate and necessary to protect the integrity of the profession.
Is it important, as was just referenced by Mr. Russell, as to what you charged at were the acts that were subject to discipline as opposed to potentially more serious acts? Because if the count one was admitted failure to report to his Berman insurance company that he had the original iPad in his possession after he purportedly found it, count two violated disciplinary rule by reporting to his firm that the Find My Phone feature didn't locate the reportedly stolen iPad despite knowing that he previously disabled that, as opposed to an allegation that he violated the canons because he didn't turn it back in when he left the firm.
I really think the evidence comes down to, the issues come down to count one. Because count two, the panel didn't really address, we didn't really focus on it. And any other allegation, if you're asking about what my assertions in the brief, I don't think it matters on sanction. It would be an aggravator if we didn't believe his explanations. And if the court decides not to believe those, then I think there is doubt about them. I think that's definitely an aggravation.
With the original misrepresentation to
that's
them
right.
that it was stolen in the burglary when he believed it was lost before that, it was failing to report it when he found it.
Right, that's correct.
So is that significant in looking at the sanctions as to it was actually charged?
I think it can still be helpful to the court, again, as an aggravator or a mitigator. I mean, I think the aggravators that are clear are his repeated decisions. You know, it's not really an isolated incident. And then refusing to admit any dishonesty. The mitigators, you know, he doesn't have priors, prior offenses. He sort of admitted it, although he never has said what rule it is.
Thank you.
Thank
Case
you.
Will be submitted.